And our special guest tonight, Ty Bollinger, with a special 2 hours of phone calls and sharing some of your very personal stories with us. Ty, of course, the author of Cancer Step Outside the Box. And we'll be back with Ty and you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Ty Bollinger with us. Ty, some people have been, you know, I'm going to say cured. You know, they've gone through chemo, they've gone through radiation. It has worked for them. Other people, obviously not. Why?
I believe that they had a healthier underlying immune system to start with. I think that's the key, as I've mentioned before in this interview. So, you know, you may have somebody that's gone through the chemo, the radiation, and they're 5 years, 10 years out, and they're doing great. And, you know, God bless them. I'm thankful that they're alive. But the treatment, actually, I don't think cured them. It may have killed the cancer cells, which the radiation and the chemo do kill the cancer cells. But there's an underlying problem that we talked about, and that was the failure of the immune system. And so they did something that caused a correction in their immune system that caused that immune system to begin working again. And that's what's keeping them healthy now, not the chemo and radiation. You know, cancer is not a disease that's caused from a deficiency of chemo. And so, you know, adding chemo to that regimen, adding radiation to that regimen will not cure you long term. That may kill the cancer, but to be cured long term, something had to have turned around in their body with the immune system.
And what about some cancers, Ty, that seem to be more aggressive than others? Case in point, your liver cancers, for example.
Yeah.
Pancreatic cancer seems to go faster than in some other regions. Melanomas can kill you, but, you know, you can fight that a little better in some cases.
Sure.
What is it about the certain kinds of cancer?
Well, I mean, like specifically with pancreatic cancer, that's the one I think that's the most scary to anybody that's diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And by the way, that's the kind of cancer that my friend at church has, is pancreatic.
And Patrick Swayze had that.
Yes, yes. And so you're diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and they really offer you no hope. Conventional medicine does not have a cure.
Well, and how in the heck do you get cancer in the pancreas?
Well, that's the problem, is that it has to do with the trophoblastic theory of cancer, which is John Beard talked about 1905, I think. He wrote a thesis on the trophoblastic theory of cancer, which basically says that in early fetal development, the placental trophoblasts produce a protective environment, which is the placenta, right? And they have a source of nutrition, which is the umbilical cord, much in the same manner as cancer cells form a protective environment, which is the tumor, and a source of nutrition, which is their new blood supply. So this was his theory, is that the cancer cells, they resemble the placental cells, the placental trophoblasts. The problem is that the enzymes that are needed to dissolve the coating around the cancer cells, which then allow the immune system to kill the cancer, they are not. You might think that because the pancreas secretes the enzymes, the pancreatic enzymes, that you would never have pancreatic cancer. That's what I first thought years and years ago when I began to study this. I'm like, okay, pancreas secretes pancreatic enzymes. Enzymes are able to kill or to remove the protective coating around the cancer cell so your body can recognize it and destroy it. Well, why do you get pancreatic cancer? The reason that we find pancreatic cancer so prevalent is that the enzymes have not been activated in the small intestine yet. And so once the small intestine activates those pancreatic enzymes, then they can travel throughout the body and remove the protective coating around the cancer cells. The body can then identify them, and then they can kill the cancer cells.
What exactly is cancer?
Cancer is the uncontrolled cell growth. It's DNA gone bad. It's damaged cells that grow uncontrollably. They've lost their self-destruction mechanism. It's often one of the genes associated with the self-destruction, or it's apoptosis is the technical term for programmed cell death, is the P53 gene. They've lost the regulation on the P53 gene, which causes them to commit suicide, and so these cells grow uncontrollably. And uncontrolled cell growth caused by a compromised immune system, which is most likely compromised by the excessive toxins that we're exposed to on a daily basis.
And is the tumor tithe, you know, the mass of the cancer cells?
Yeah, I mean, that's what a tumor is the mass of the cancer. But the tumor is really more of a symptom of a cancer. It's not the cancer itself, right? And so it's just the gathering of all these cells together into a tumor. But when you cut out a tumor, or you radiate a tumor, or you use chemotherapeutic agents on a tumor, you've removed the symptom of the cancer, but you've not removed the cancer, because the cancer is a result of a compromised immune system. So it's likely that you may cut out a tumor and the cancer evidences itself somewhere else in the body, which happens quite frequently. I am contacted all the time by folks that has happened to. They had a tumor. It was cut out or radiated, or they took chemotherapy to kill the tumor, and now they've got cancer in other parts of their body. That's because they just removed the symptom of the cancer, but they didn't fix the underlying cause.
Angelina Jolie underwent a very aggressive procedure to prevent cancer. She had an 85% possibility of getting it in the future, and she had a double mastectomy. Pretty gutsy move on her part.
It is. You're caught in between a rock and a hard place, aren't you, when you're diagnosed with when you have that BRCA gene that supposedly causes you to have an increase, 85% chance of developing breast cancer. I'm not convinced that that's an accurate statistic. I've looked at the way that they've done those studies, and I'm not convinced that's true. But let's say that it is. Then, did she make a good decision or not? That's up to the person, right? It's up to her. My position is that it's never a good idea to lop off body parts, because who says that the cancer then won't evidence itself somewhere else? Because she has the BRCA gene still, and the BRCA gene's been linked to other cancers as well, and in men, prostate cancer, supposedly at least. They say there's a link. So let's say that there is that link, and you lop off your breast. Well, what's going to keep the cancer from evidencing itself somewhere else in your body? And so that's what we were just talking about with the tumor. You lop off a tumor, you lop off a body part, you still got the underlying immune system failure and or genetic predisposition. What's going to stop the cancer from evidencing itself in your colon or in your pancreas or in your liver?
Nothing. Ty, tell us about the Flexner Report. What is that?
The Flexner Report. Oh, how much time do we have, George? How much time do we have for the Flexner Report? The Flexner Report is what has made modern medicine the way that it is. It is what has resulted in a drug-intensive style of medicine today. The Flexner Report was a report that was completed by a man named Abraham Flexner in 1910. He was commissioned by the American Medical Association and the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie
Foundation. In 1910,
so over 100 years ago. He was commissioned by the Rockefellers and the Carnegies to go across the country. He took the head of the American Medical Association with him on this trip. And he visited every medical school in the United States at that time. And he rated those schools. He ranked them. He gave them good big grades or bad grades. He passed them or he failed them. He was the headmaster of those schools. And he determined which of those schools were teaching sound medicine, which ones were not teaching sound medicine. Now, the definition of sound medicine, which he was given by Rockefeller himself, was those schools that were teaching drug-intensive medicine would receive good grades. Because why? Rockefeller wanted to monopolize the chemical industry because he owned chemical companies, and his mantra was competition is a sin. He wanted to eliminate competition with the homeopathic and the herbalistic and the chiropractic-type medical schools that were teaching natural medicine. So Flexner went across the country. He ranked all the medical schools that were teaching drugs as having good sound medicine. Those that were teaching natural medicine received failing grades. And so after the Flexner Report was submitted to Congress, Rockefeller and Carnegie then funded $550 million. George, in 1913 dollars.
That's a lot of money.
That was a lot. It was
a lot of money then, a lot of money now.
Yes. So they funded the medical schools. They received the high passing grades, and those medical schools are the ones that remained and lasted. Over the next 25 years, over 10,000 herbalists were out of business. All of the chiropractic schools, virtually all the chiropractic and homeopathic medical schools were gone, and they monopolized medicine now. That's why the medicine today is a drug-intensive style of medicine, because the Flexner Report, funded by Rockefeller and Carnegie over 100 years ago, produced by Abraham Flexner, who had zero medical training.
What a great move on their part, huh?
Yes. And then, by the way, in 1913, after the Flexner Report was issued, the AMA developed what they called their propaganda department. Okay, it sounds like Nazi Germany, the propaganda department.
It does.
They were dedicated at attacking all unconventional medicine, which was anyone that practiced non-drug intensive medicine.
All right, let's take some calls. Rick is in Sierra Vista, Arizona, first time caller. Hi, Rick. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Finally get a chance to talk to you. I met you back at the Conscious Life Expo with Zachariah Sitchin.
Oh, a couple of years ago. That's right.
Yes, sir. Yeah. You, in fact, Dan and Brinkley, you and I had a picture taken, and I still cherish that picture.
Well, super.
My question really is, though, I'm a Vietnam vet. I've been dealing with hepatitis since the early 70s. And
See? Hepatitis?
Kind of a tough subject.
What's hepatitis C, Rick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they didn't call it that back then.
No, they didn't know that.
Chronic persistent and chronic active, and then it morphed into C somehow back in the 90s. But I've been doing alternative medicine since the 70s. I started out with a common club moss, you know, to has radium for healing, and I've just gone through everything. And I right now I'm on a program of milk thistle and maitake mushroom and all this stuff. But just recently, in fact, the first week in April, I just got this severe pain in my gut, and I thought it was a gallbladder or something. And so I went into the emergency room, and of course, it took me a while to get into the VA hospital. And luckily, I had pain pills, because the pain just went through the roof really fast. And so now I'm eating like 6 codeine pills a day just to keep the pain down.
Oh, my
So then I had a CAT scan done, and they showed that my spleen is enlarged. The liver has a bunch of tumors around it. My intestines, lymph glands are swollen. My portal vein has got hypertension in it.
Malignant, Rick?
Well, they're not really sure. The 2 blood tests have come back that said that it's not mastocyzing, and it hasn't traveled to any other organs yet.
Good.
But I'm just starting my therapy. I go in on the 11th for a colonoscopy, and then at the same time they're going to do a tube down my stomach or something.
they also go that way.
Liver biopsy and another MRI and all that stuff. So my question for Ty is, should I go with the big 3 like he was saying, or do I go with an alternative program like he suggests? Because I'm more apt to go with his suggestion, because I've been dealing with alternative herbs and supplements since I was diagnosed with hepatitis at the VA hospital in Long Beach. In 1975.
And, well, keep in mind here, Rick, and I want to give you a little qualifier here. Ty's not a doctor, so he's not.
I understand that.
And he's not gonna tell you what to do or what not to do. That's something that you're gonna have to decide. But you need to be, and before you get in here, Ty, you need to be very careful. You know, like Steven Jobs may have waited a little too long. You know, he was all natural all the time, and it didn't work for him. It works for some people. And again, I don't think you should at any point throw out conventional medicine. I'd like a combination of both. I would, if God forbid, if anything like that happened to me, I'd go conventional and I'd also go natural at the same time. Ty, I'll let you jump in here.
Yeah, well, thanks, George. And you're right. You know, I'm not a doctor, so I can't recommend any treatments. And the conventional, the complementary approach is what you're talking about. And that's actually the whole focus of our last book, you know, Work With Your Doctor, is complementary medicine, working using natural methods along with conventional methods if available. Now, I can tell you, Rick, what I would do. And so this is not in any way a suggestion as what you should do, but have you read my book, Cancer Step Outside the Box?
No, sir. I just hear your advertising about carnivora.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, if you've read the book, Cancer Step Outside the Box, you know I would never go conventional, the big 3. But that's just me personally.
Right.
It's your decision. There are a lot of people that will do the big 3. They'll do chemo and radiation or surgery, the combination of them. But they'll also throw in some good natural complementary type treatments. So the choice is yours. There's a lot of good natural things that you can do for cancer. And, you know, Rick, just shoot me an email, and I'll shoot you a copy of the ebook on the cancer ebook free of charge. So just do that, and I'll
appreciate
that information, and I'll be glad to go back and forth with you privately.
Okay, good enough.
And my email address, by the way, is on the website, cancertruth.net. You can just go to the contact page, and you can shoot me an email there, and I'll get back with you.
Okay.
Good luck, Rick. Keep in touch with us, too, okay?
Thanks, George.
Okay, my friend. Be a fighter. I would. Is there a percentage, Ty, of how many people are afflicted with cancer?
Well, yeah. The latest World Health Organization statistic from 2010 is that, well, the currently afflicted or will be afflicted in their life. The statistic that I'm familiar with is those that will be afflicted during their lifetime is 41%.
41%.
41%.
Does it generally, I mean, children come down with cancer. I mean, I've seen these very sad stories of children with cancer, but does it generally hit people when they become elderly or not?
No, it actually doesn't. There's a pretty even dispersion between children to the elderly. It hits folks of all different ages now. The interesting thing, George, is that, as we mentioned, 100 years ago, cancer was actually pretty rare. It was about 1 in 80.
How long can you go with cancer? I'm not talking about the fact that we all have the cancer cells in us,
sure.
but how long can you go with cancer, a pretty active cancer, and not know it?
Oh, years, if not decades.
Really?
Yes. Yes, it depends on the kind of cancer and it depends on how fast it's growing. But let's say that we're talking about prostate cancer, because that's a big one with men that are over 50 years old. Well, prostate cancer will afflict most men that die over the age of 70. And most men over 50 will begin to have issues with prostate cancer, and they may not know about it. I think it was Dr. Thomas Thamey, who is one of the ones that was involved with the originations of the PSA test, the prostate-specific antigen test for detecting prostate cancer. He's quoted as saying, and I believe it's Thamey, he's quoted as saying that most men will die with prostate cancer, but not from it.
Well, and also they're also saying that you don't necessarily need a PSA test all the time.
Yeah, well, the PSA test is kind of a misnomer because PSA stands for, as I said, prostate-specific antigen, but it's not prostate-specific because it's women with certain types of breast cancer have an elevated PSA level, so they don't even have a prostate. So it's not necessarily prostate-specific. It's more of a measure of inflammation than it is of cancer. As a matter of fact, the man that developed one of the developers of the test, it wasn't Stamey, I can't think of his name at this point, but he is quoted as saying that the PSA has little relevance to cancer today. You might as well biopsy someone for having blue eyes.
Where do we in North America, Canada, the United States stand in terms of percent of people with cancer compared to, you know, Asian nations or European nations?
We have much more cancer. And the reason is in North America, because our diets are so bad, I believe. We're eating and if you look at the Asian nations that then began to introduce the fast food restaurants that previously had a lower incidence of cancer, their cancer rates begin to rise.
Now it's going up again.
Yeah, it's going up. So it's our diets are so bad here. I mean, how many people do you know, George, that eat fast food restaurants two times a day? You know, there are people that live in restaurants, and not even necessarily just fast food restaurants. Now, restaurants, even if it's what you would think of as being an upper-class restaurant or a healthy restaurant, if they're serving you genetically modified ingredients without your knowledge, wow, that's going to really skyrocket the cancer down
sure
the road
is.
As well.
More with Ty Bollinger, more with you when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, as you know, this program is interactive, and we give a Coast listener the opportunity to just sound off. You can, too. Send us your editorial at coasttocoastam.com, all right? Editorial at coasttocoastam.com. Write it out about a minute's worth. And put your name and phone number there. Tom will get back to you. We might record you.
Hi, my name is Clint. I'm from New York City, and this is my sound off. How come we have these super advanced smartphones? We've got the world's best technology providers in AT&T, Verizon, Sprint. And yet every time you get to the important part of a cell phone conversation, you lose the call. It happens to me every time. It's like a joke. When I'm talking to a business associate, I lose the call. I call him back. I'm like, I know I got to the most important part of this call, because you always lose the call when you get to the most important part of the call. When are these guys going to get it together, man? We pay a lot of money for this cell phone service. I want the calls to be reliable. My name is Clint, and this was my sound off.
And welcome back to Coast to Coast with Ty Bollinger. We'll take your calls. Ty, of course, you've been very close to cancer. God forbid if you came down with it. What would you do personally?
Yeah, what I would do personally is there's several specific treatments that I'm very fond of, and I would immediately get on those cancer treatments. If you want me to name them, I'll be glad to.
Sure.
Yeah, one of them is called Life One. I've talked about that before. It's a it's an herbal product that contains 8 different medicinal herbs, including resveratrol, quercetin, turmeric, green tea extract, chrysin, dindalomethane, selenium, a lot of different...
Just about everything we've talked about individually.
Yeah, sure. All the good stuff. But the thing that makes Life One unique is that it is in a liposome. It's in a fat base, so that you get a more efficient delivery of the active ingredients in these herbs than if you take them orally without the liposome. The liposome allows the actives to be delivered to your bloodstream, and you get a 90%+ delivery. It's almost like a liquid IV. So definitely Life One. You know, I love Carnivora. Take that every day. That's a great treatment. I can say that because I don't sell it, but you know, none of these products I sell, so I can tell you the truth about them. So those are two. Hyperthermia is something that is excellent. I do on a daily basis, but if I were diagnosed, I'd up the hyperthermia. It's just laying in an infrared sauna, because cancer cells don't do well when you superheat them, and the normal cells do.
What about your pH balance?
Yeah, you definitely want to monitor that, because as we've talked about in the past, cancer loves an acidic environment, not alkaline environment. So you would want to get your pH to an alkaline level, get it away from acidic level. And, you know, one of the main things that people do that keeps their body in an acidic state, which cancer loves to thrive, is just drinking too many sodas, because sodas are acidic. You've seen the videos, I'm sure, where you can put a spoon in a cup of a soda and it will dissolve the metal. So very, very acidic. You don't want that in your body. So one of the best things you can do, and I can probably list half a dozen people that I have talked to over the last 6-7 years since I published the book, that have done nothing in their diet different than stop drinking sodas, and their health has been regained.
All right, let's take some more calls here for you, Ty. We'll go to Baltimore, Maryland. East Charles is with us. Hi, Charles. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, how come some cancers, like cancer of the penis, which I have, you know, aren't really, not a lot of us know about it compared to other cancers?
Well, I would guess it's probably because, unfortunately, where you have it. It's not that well known.
That's true.
You know, it's, you know what? And it's very personal, too, you know, with what he's got. I mean, God forbid, but I wish you well, Charles. Wish you well. What's the most obvious cancer, the one that comes up the most?
Well, the most obvious visually is typically a skin cancer. You know, you've got your basal cells, your squamous cells, or your melanomas. Those are the most visual cancers that you can notice immediately. You know, the breast cancer, not necessarily noticeable. Prostate, you know, the internal organs, not noticeable. So the most visible, I guess, would be the skin cancers. Are you saying the most frequent, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, the most frequent cancer in women that I deal with is breast cancer.
Breast cancer.
Most frequent in men is prostate cancer. Yeah. And, you know, prostate cancer is so prevalent, George, because we just we're not active like we used to be. And so the prostate cancer and the breast cancer, they both result from a lack of exercise, which stimulates the lymphatic flow. Your lymphatic system is part of your immune system, and it's also a primary detoxification system in your body. And the way that we sit nowadays at a desk job for 8, 10, 12 hours a day, just sitting at a computer, no movement, you don't have that up and down movement that you would get even walking. That's what stimulates the lymphatic system. And 100 years ago, we were working in the field. Farmers were out working. Everybody was out planting and doing things outdoors. And so the lymphatic flow was being stimulated. Today, 95% of people have a desk job and they don't ever stimulate the lymph flow. So that's why it's so important that if you do have a desk job, which I do, I work at a computer all day long, researching and writing and dealing with cancer patients, it's important to jump on a mini trampoline if you can find one. If not, you know, walk, do some kind of exercise. But the best exercise for stimulating the lymph is a mini tramp, a little rebounder. Just do 20 minutes a day, stimulate the lymphatic flow, and you're going to do wonders for your health and your lymphatic system.
Next up, we go to Jude in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Jude, welcome. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I'm so grateful for you taking my call.
Of course.
My brother has pancreatic cancer, and he did the Whipple surgery, the chemo, the radiation, and he looks really bad. He looks like he hasn't got long to go. My question is, if he did something like this, Life One and carnivore and hypothermia and balances pH, could he come back around? Or once you get so bad, there's no way of coming back?
You know what, Jude, let me answer that with a story that is a personal story that I've dealt with in the past. It was a doctor that I know in Norway. He had pancreatic cancer. He was on death's door. He was told three times that to call his family because he would be gone.
It was over for him.
Huh? It was over for him. And he got on. He actually did get on the Life One protocol, and he's alive today, back at work. That was a year and a half ago. So I'm not promising anything. I'm not recommending anything. But this is a story where this was somebody that was told he was terminal with pancreatic cancer, and he's alive today. So it's never too late. There's always hope. Don't let anybody tell you there's not. There's always things that you can do.
You know, it's amazing how you can take care of yourself. What about prayer? How important is that time?
Prayer is very important because that's part of the – well, prayer is important, you know, to me. Being a Christian, I pray the Lord, and it's important to a lot of people in the United States, regardless of your religion. People pray. Now, here's why it's important, I think. The epigenetic factor, which we talked about earlier. What is epigenetics? It's things that are above genetics. It's things that can influence your health that are above genetics, that may be something that would cause your genetics to not manifest in such a way that it would cause cancer. So let's say you have someone that has the propensity to have cancer, and they are a person of prayer that has a very tremendous amount of spirituality and positive thinking. And these are things, these mental attitudes, these emotional attitudes can cause your epigenetics to overcome your genetics, and so that the cancer would not be expressed. Or I know people that have done nothing except prayer that has cured their cancer without changing anything, without doing any treatments, just prayer. Now, it may be that God healed them, or it may be that God used the epigenetic factor and the fact that these genetic traits are not being expressed because of their positive emotions, and that brought them out of the cancer. I don't know how it works, but I know that's a huge component.
Next up, Joshua in Texas, Wildcard Line. Josh, go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. It's good to be off tonight. I just wanted to touch base on a few things. One, have you both heard about the KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, about how their menu says they have a warning that their product is known to the state of California to cause cancer or to be like a promoter of cancer growth. Apparently, some of their product contains PHIT, which is a chemical classified as a carcinogen in the state of California.
I've not heard of that.
If you look up online, there was a lawsuit filed about it in California. I forget the area, but I know they went to six different KFCs in the Bay Area, and from grilled chicken to varieties of chicken, from I guess maybe the ingredients and the way they cook it, since it's both fried and grilled.
Yeah.
I used to work at a KFC, so that's one of the reasons why I also know about this. And I mean, looking at the ingredients, I noticed that some of the stuff did seem like it might have either been GM or possibly just a lot of preservatives. Another thing I wanted to ask about is because, you see, my father, he was recently, it was by chance that they found that he had stomach cancer, and he was so far along that he almost died. He could have actually died in a day and a half if he hadn't gone to the hospital because he was feeling really bad. And so as soon as they found him, they gave him 4.5 pints of blood, I believe, the whole bags, and turned up, he got his whole stomach. And, he went from one day being in the hospital to finding out he's got cancer, to a few days later being prepped for surgery, going in, getting it taken out, the whole stomach. And, he's going through chemo, or he actually just finished that, and he's starting radiation. And I've been trying to get him to try and juice, but, he just looks at me like I'm an idiot because, I'm his youngest son. I'm 24. I don't know what I'm talking about, but, I mean, I've done research, and I do believe that, like you said, I was actually going to ask you, Ty, about an alkaline pH balance how cancer cannot potentially survive in a highly oxygenated body, right?
That's right.
Sure.
In an alkaline body, you want to make sure you've got as much alkaline as possible.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. And your father's scenario sounds very similar to my father. He had the same issues with the stomach. They took out his stomach. I'm thankful that your father has made it thus far. My dad was dead in 25 days after the surgery.
By the way, Ty, let me read you this story. Raised levels of a chemical linked to cancer have been found in a range of foods from KFC meals to breakfast cereals. Food watchdogs identified the increased quantities of acrylamide in 14 popular products.
Sure.
The chemical is formed when foods are roasted, toasted, fried at high temperatures. Scientists say it's a potential carcinogenic.
Yep.
If consumed regularly over a lifetime, which many people do who eat these kinds of food, but they're in certain chips, they're in bran flakes. I guess you got to be careful.
God. You do. I was familiar with the acrylamide. That acrylamide occurs anytime that it's a chemical that is found anytime that you superheat a carbohydrate. So I just was not aware of the fact that KFC had been required to label that on their food. But I'm very aware that acrylamide are created anytime that you fry food, unless it's in coconut oil. Then you're not going to have that issue. But other oils, you're going to have acrylamide formed. The interesting thing to me about the KFC comment was the fact that, if you remember, in 2010, I believe it was, they were one of the sponsors for Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's funny having...
Well, French fries aren't very good either at a fast food place.
No, they're not. They're not. But, back to the topic at hand, the alkalization is very important. And so I would... You know, a lot of times family members, sadly, but truthfully, are the hardest to reach. And they're going to think you're nuts, and they're not going to listen to you, whereas they might listen to a stranger. But I think the juicing is a great idea. It's a great idea, number one, to get nutrients into the body, because most cancer patients are starving for nutrition. So you need to get nutrients into the body. You also need to get the pH up, and juicing is a good way to alkalinize the body. So I think that's a great suggestion. My best wishes on getting your father to listen to you, because, as I said, a lot of times family will not listen to family.
You know, every once in a while, not to be morbid, but, I'll go online at various city newspapers and look at the obit column just to see how many people have passed on in that day in that city.
From cancer.
I mean, from anything.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. And then you read the story, their ages. You look at their ages, 35, 45, 85. I mean, they range the gamuts everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I do the same, but I go one step further. I look at specifically to see how many people died of cancer. And it's amazing, isn't it, how many people in any given day die from cancer. It's just sickening. It is an epidemic.
It's sad.
It is.
You know, how come... when they operate on somebody who has cancer, once the air hits it, it seems like they go faster. Is that my perception, or is that real?
No, a lot of times they do, and here's why. Surgery spreads the cancer. So if they're operating on somebody, even biopsies do. Biopsies spread the cancer. Surgery spreads the cancer. Anytime that you cut into a cancer cell.
What about the oxygen?
What does it do to the cancer?
Yeah, the pure oxygen. You know, you open someone up and the oxygen hits it, right?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Well, you know, you got conflicting sides of the coin on that, because cancer is anaerobic, so it does not do well in oxygen. It loves to ferment sugar, so it's an anaerobe. But at the same time, it seems to spread when you get the oxygen to it, when it's an open cut. And I think that may be kind of a misnomer that the oxygen is affecting it. I think more what's happening there is the cancer is being seeded by the surgery into the bloodstream. And so I think what's happening when you use surgery to remove a cancerous tumor is you're actually going to seed that tumor into the bloodstream, and that's what's going to make it spread. I think that's why people go faster. Or in the case of my father, I don't think it caused the cancer to necessarily spread. I think what happened is they botched the surgery so much to the extent that he died of he bled to death. Actually, I don't know if I've ever told you that, but over the course of the 25 days that my dad was in the hospital, he had 19 blood transfusions. So they really botched the surgery, and he bled to death from the surgery. So surgery can be dangerous in many different ways, but one of the ways is that it does spread cancer.
Alicia, Oregon, here we go. Hi, Alicia.
Hi, George.
Good to have you with us.
Hi. I have relapsed remitting multiple sclerosis, which is progressive autoimmune disease.
Yes.
I've now moved into the advanced progressive relapse remitting. I've been on gadamer acetate, which the brand name is Copaxone, daily injections for over 7 years now. It's been failing me in its intention. My neurologist wants me to begin this new disease-modifying agent, the first of its kind approved by the FDA just this last March. It's the first oral medication to be available in the United States. It's called Tecfidera. Does that sound right?
I haven't heard of that. How about you, Ty?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
D-E-R-A doesn't have any clinical trials. There's no studies. It has no track record in the U.S. and only in Europe. It was only 3 years. And, I'm, like, really apprehensive about taking this, too, because it's become another big pharma statistic and wind up in some class action lawsuit with, you know, the 100% worse fatal than if I had not taken anything at all. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
It's a tough call. Try 30 seconds before.
Okay, yeah, my first reaction is a human guinea pig. Personally, I would never do an experiment. Listen, Alicia, just email me, go to cancertruth.net, email me. I'll send you a free copy of my book, Work With Your Doctor. We address multiple sclerosis in there, and there's natural remedies that you can read about.
You know, most of this, you know, the internet's been a great tool for self-diagnosis of things, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very, a tremendous tool. The problem is that there's so much information, sometimes it's overwhelming.
That's true, and you got to be careful of the sources when you start reading this stuff.
That's true. Two-edged sword. It's a two-edged sword, I've had people that have said, you know, they found on the internet that they should they have brain cancer, and they heard that on the internet that they should eat a lot of walnuts because walnuts are shaped like your brain, and if you overload on nuts that are shaped like your body part, that it will.
But you do. Walnuts are good for you, but it's the chemical in the walnuts that's good. Ty, we're coming back with a final hour of phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM.